Good morning, and thank you for tuning in to KBOO. You're listening to A Deeper Look, and I'm your host, Linda Olson Osterlund. Our topic today is the American Muslim woman. My guest is Fatima Fakhry. She's one of 40 American Muslim women who contribute essays to the anthology titled I Speak for Myself, American Women on Being Muslim. It was published earlier this summer out of Ashland, Oregon by White Cloud Press. And Fatima is going to be speaking, is going to be speaking tonight at Powell Books at 7:30 p.m. right out on West Burnside and 10th. All of the women in this book are under 40 and very accomplished. I was amazed there are more PhDs in there than 40 women should have. And our guest is, well, actually 40 women should have. Our guest is no exception. She doesn't have a PhD, but she does have a bachelor's degree in journalism, a master's in fashion design, and she created the website called Muslima Media Watch. She's also a self-described feminist. Welcome to KBOO, Fatima.
Hi, Linda. Thank you so much for having me.
Can you talk a little bit about how you got involved in doing this book, how it was that you contributed an essay to it?
Yeah. Well, I had met Mariah Ibrahimji in around April 2009 in New York, and she contacted me via email and then through phone and, you know, said that she and a friend were putting together a book about the experiences of American Muslim women. And she asked me if I'd like to contribute because she'd seen my work with Muslima Media Watch. And also, you know, I wrote for a lot of other publications at the time. And she, you know, she liked my work and wanted me to contribute.
And what I found interesting about what you did contribute is that it wasn't about, it wasn't overtly about being a Muslim at all. It was a story called Roots, or an essay called Roots, and it was about going home, being nagged by your parents to come visit. Talk about why you chose something that was so not obviously Muslim or non-Muslim.
Yeah, well, I didn't want to talk about religion specifically for several reasons. I knew that others in the book probably would, so I figured, you know, it would already be covered. And I also didn't want to talk about it because I wanted to talk about something that a lot of people can relate to, the parent-child relationship. You know, I love my parents, and I'm watching them get older and trying to figure out how my brother and I will balance our duties as caretakers with our own lives. And I figured, you know, this is a wonderful opportunity for the women and I in this book to kind of share how we're the same, you know, how we're just as American as everyone else, and how our concerns are really, really similar.
And that's what I found really interesting in the book. Even the ones where the concerns were not so overtly similar, say they had to deal with the issue of wearing hijab or not, which we will want to talk about. Each story was very individual, and each story held the same core issues that I felt growing up myself. Did I want people to look at me for being pretty or not? Mm-hmm. Did I always want to have to match up to society's expectations of how I should dress and what I should look like? Did I want to obey my parents' wishes about what I should wear and how I should look? And in my growing up, that had nothing to do with religion. But for most of the women in this book, it also then brought in the whole issue of, am I true to my religion if I dress differently than other women who are part of my religion? So those issues are not so very different from what most of us grow up as adolescent American women.
Yeah, and the hijab is a...
Talk about that. You don't wear hijab, yeah, but many of the women in the book do, and some don't.
Yes, I do not wear hijab. It's funny because on Muslima Media Watch, we basically have to cover, you know, media coverage of Muslim women, like, often revolves around coverings, so like headscarves or the niqab or the burqa.
Tell our audience what Muslima Media Watch is.
Well, MuslimaMediaWatch.org is a website I started in 2007, which was basically, when I started, it was a place to complain, essentially, about how dissatisfied I was and am with media, global media representation of Muslim women. And thankfully, it's grown and expanded over the years. We have about 16 international contributors now. and we just look at media from all over the world, Western media, you know, media in predominantly Muslim countries, how they portray women, the different sort of isms that often occur in these contexts, like sexism, Islamophobia, racism sometimes. So when we see stuff we hate, you know, we criticize it and we try to make it better. Try to give pointers. And then when we see stuff we like, we promote it, we applaud it. Media criticism, I think, goes both ways. You have to promote the good and the bad.
Well, let's talk a little bit about media since we're there. Let's talk about media following 9/11. Many of the stories in this book have a critical point coming after 9/11. Of course, that was a world-shattering event just because of the impact of the U.S. on the world. And it was world-shattering here, and there was a huge backlash against Muslim people and even people just thought to be Muslims, you know, Sikhs wearing turbans within this country. And many of the women went into their religions and really went and said, well, how does what happened have anything to do with my religion? And dug deeper into Islam and grew closer to Islam. Some women began putting on hijab after 9/11 as they grew closer to their faith and as a desire to show the world that good people can wear the hijab. How did, and the media played a huge role in all of this. How did that impact you at that time, and how has that changed?
I think that media coverage post 9/11 has obviously taken a very sharp interest in Muslims, both in the U.S. and abroad. And I, you know, sometimes I think it's one step forward, two steps back. There's been plenty of stories about American Muslims and about American Muslim women and what Islam is all about. In the last 10 years, there's been so many of these stories. And yet there's still so much misinformation spread, sometimes willingly, that it's almost difficult to believe that we've come this far. We've had all of this coverage. We've been telling you what Islam is about for the last 10 years. Why aren't you understanding it yet? Why is there still such a backlash sometimes? Like, you know, there are little victories. For example, Whole Foods is currently running a halal food promotion for Ramadan, and they've identified that they have Muslim consumers and that they're important to the company's future. And then you have the two steps back, like these ridiculous political campaigns against Sharia law, or the really nasty campaign against the mosque in New York. It's just one of those things where we press ahead and we try to, you know, make as much progress as possible, but it's sometimes it can feel like a never-ending uphill fight.
And I'm talking with Fatemeh Fakhri. She is an essayist with the book I Speak for Myself, American Woman, I'm Being Muslim. She also is a Oregonian. She lives in Corvallis and works at OSU and is a blogger, a publisher, and an editor. Well, let's get back to the hijab and after 9/11. Talk a little bit about your history and your choices around the hijab and then about others that you know of.
Well, like you said earlier, I don't wear the headscarf, and that has been a very conscious decision. I've never had any, you know, no one has ever asked me to wear it. No one has ever told me, like, you should wear it. But through my own study, through, you know, my interpretation of the Quran and just my reading, I don't believe that it's, that specifically covering my hair is mandated. And there are a lot of people who would disagree with me about that, but that's just how I look at things. That doesn't mean, of course, that I don't believe no one should wear it, and I don't believe that people should have the right to wear it. I definitely do. Hijab is very personal, and I think that it's the kind of thing every woman herself needs to make a choice about. And the choices are, you know, they vary so widely. You can ask 10 different women who wear headscarves why they wear them and get 10 different answers.
So for some, it's just cultural, isn't it? And for others, it's a very conscious religious choice.
It can be, yeah. It can run the whole gamut. I mean, some people view it very religiously, and that's why they do it. Some people do it as like you said, it's cultural. It's just something that their family has done, and that's why they want to continue it. They view it as part of their cultural heritage. Other people, it's a political decision. And for some people, it's even a fashion decision. You know, when you think about it, hijab is just another accessory sometimes.
One of the women in the book talked about how beautiful scarves, and she loved fashion, and she loves hijab as well, and that she finds her clothing beautiful. But she also, there was another woman who chose to dress fully in loose covered garments. I'm not sure what the name of the particular one she was wearing, not a burqa as such. And she felt that that allowed her, for the first time, to be free from, she was an American, growing up in American society, and to be free from all of the pressure in this society for women to be pretty and for their bodies and their faces and their hair to display themselves at their most prettiest always. And she said it was amazing the pressure it took off her and how her own personal confidence grew as she didn't have to concern herself with what were people thinking about her body, but what were they thinking about what she had to say or who she was as a person. So it really does vary, and I think it's important for the American public to know that. Now, some of the women felt that when people see them with their scarf, they automatically think that they are weak or submissive. You obviously don't wear the scarf, so you don't get that. But one of the concerns in your writings is that American Muslim women, but all Muslim women, be seen for the strong women that they are when they are. Do you run into that misconception when you're talking to people about Muslims and women, about their perception that if you see a woman on the street with a scarf or with full dress, that she's somehow submissive?
Sometimes, yeah. Like you said, I'm not visibly readily identifiable as a Muslim because I don't wear hijab. So I don't usually have to deal with that. You know, any misconceptions people have about me, they usually come into play once I've, like, oh, yes, you know, I'm, you know, Iranian-American, or, oh, yes, you know, I'm Muslim. But, you know, like I said, even after all of this, you know, these stories about how Muslim-American women are, you know, empowered, and that's such a weird term to use, but, you know, how we're really just like everyone else, working, going to school, living our lives, there's still a lot of misconceptions about why women might wear hijab, and there's a lot of assumption that other people make them wear it, like their fathers or their husbands. There's an assumption, then, like, that's like a basic assumption, and then you go and get into the really weird assumptions, like, do you shower with that on, which, you know, is not true.
Let's talk about being a Muslim and being a feminist. You describe yourself as a feminist. Now, some people would say, well, that's just not possible. That religion doesn't really allow feminism, so you can't really believe in that religion and be a feminist. What do you say when you have people question you about the two?
Oh, yeah, that is one of the most annoying things, is that people just assume that I can't be both. Which I think is a really ridiculous assumption to put on someone else. I wasn't raised religiously. My parents were of two different faiths, and they never, you know, expected us to choose one or the other. But when I got to college and I was reading up on Islam more and on Iran more, I came across works by Islamic feminists and by Muslims who thought they were feminists. So I was reading these, and it all just sort of clicked. You know, because feminism to me is about fairness. And one of the main points, you know, the big picture issues of Islam is fairness. So to me, they work perfectly. You know, I find feminism in Islam, and I find, you know, an Islamic notion of fairness in feminism. The idea that everyone deserves respect, everyone deserves the same choices and the same chances to get ahead. You know, people who think I can't be Muslim and feminist don't know me. They don't really understand my Islam or my feminism.
Well, talk a little bit about your feminism, how that expresses itself. Obviously, the website is part of that.
Definitely. Most of my feminist activism actually is through my websites. So Muslim Media Watch, but also through my speaking. You know, I speak on Muslim women's issues and issues of women in the media. This last weekend, actually, I spoke at the Blog Her Conference. It's a really large conference that they have for female bloggers every year. And I spoke on the closing keynote panel with Carol Jenkins, who's the president of the Women's Media Center, and Ricky Lake, who everyone knows.
Yeah, kind of exciting.
Very. And she bankrolled a movie about women's birthing choices. And, you know, that we spoke about media and how women can use media to further their voices and how we specifically used media to further women's voices. So my activism is, you know, a lot of, it's very media related.
One of the women in the book also has her degree in broadcasting and planned a career to go on to broadcasting. She now says she was naive, but she really had been so successful in college and in all of her efforts. She wears hijab, and she openly wears it and always has, and so she began sending out tapes to all these different stations trying to get a job, hundreds probably by now, and found that indeed the hijab was a real barrier for getting on air in any kind of media. How do you see that barrier, and do you see that breaking anytime soon?
I know that eventually it will. Muslim Americans, you know, we're not as huge of a segment of the population as people would believe, but we're a hardworking part of the population, and we are a really strong part of the American fabric. And so I know eventually those barriers are going to have to break. But I think that her essay, and this is Maryam Sob's essay, I think that her essay really highlights the very real and very present barriers that a lot of women face and a lot of Muslim women face in media, but also just in the workforce. So, you know, sometimes it's just hard to get ahead because of who you are. That's a reality. Institutional discrimination is part of what I, you know, work against as a feminist and as a Muslim. And these are issues that are very real.
Here in Oregon last year, the legislature passed a measure that would forbid women teachers from wearing hijab. That's a battle that has not yet been won. I mean, it actually went backwards for us. And they, of course, weren't just banning women Muslims, but that Sikhs and anyone else who wears overtly religious garb. I think that's a battle that we'll have to be fighting as we go forward here, because I don't think that represents how we want to be in the state. I understand that the concern that secularists have for not promoting religion, but we have to have enough room to allow people who have dress that is religious to be worn.
I definitely agree. And I think that's another one of those barriers I'm talking about. It's like, you know, maybe this doesn't specifically target Muslim women, but it targets religious women who for them, you know, their religion is part of their visible parents and a visible part of their lives. And I think that it's unfair to assume that just because you're wearing a cross or just because you're wearing like a wig like some very traditional Jewish women wear, or even because you're wearing a headscarf, means that you're not capable of teaching objectively or secularly. I really don't agree with that. And I think that is going to be a battle worth fighting in the next, you know, in the next few election cycles.
As we keep going forward. There was another issue of conflict that arose that I found very interesting in the book, and I don't know if you feel comfortable speaking to it, but it was the issue of race. And it wasn't just the issue of race as in Americans not liking darker-skinned Muslims who might, you know, be Pakistani or India or from some other nation, and the foreignness. Many of the young women growing up in American suburbs faced "you're different." But it was African-American Muslims, women whose families had converted to Islam before they were born, and they were raised as Muslims. But there was a division, and they found that they had to defend themselves even to other Muslims, and that they ran into racists from Arab Muslims who identified as Arabs. Can you talk a little bit about that conflict and that issue within the Muslim community?
Yeah, I can try. Like I said, as a feminist and as a Muslim, I battle against isms. And the reality is that those isms, like the sexism, racism, that's everywhere, and it's even in our own communities. And that's something that we need to be honest about. And so I'm really glad that she wrote that piece, because our community is just like every other community. We have issues we need to talk about. We have problems with, sometimes there are clashes between the African American Muslim communities and immigrants, largely Pakistani or largely Arab Muslim communities. These are realities, and they need to be talked about so that we can figure out how to move ahead.
What I thought was interesting is there are exactly the same realities that we face as Americans in any religious background, or really even in secularism. Racism doesn't go away because religion is involved, and religion doesn't go away because race is involved. Yeah. We tangle with these things, and we as humans seem to want to separate each other out by these kinds of classifications. It can make for a difficult life.
It's the human struggle.
It is. We're moving into the 10th anniversary of 9/11, and we talked a little bit about it. There'll be a lot of information out. The media will be focusing on this a lot. Are you planning to focus on it in any way? And if you are, in what way?
I'm actually not planning to focus on it very much at all.
Would you rather see not so much focus going on it? How do you think it's going to impact? I mean, are you concerned that it might impact the Muslim community, or are you just thinking this is something we've moved on from?
Well, I mean, I know a lot of Muslim colleagues who are New Yorkers, and they're doing a lot of work for the 10th anniversary because it was something there that, you know, really impacted them. That's their home. And it happened to them.
Have you had any direct experience of people blaming 9/11 on Muslims around you, or having any responses to that? Or were you far enough away from that to not have that directly impact you?
For the most part, I have been pretty sheltered from that, thankfully. But the reality is that some people still believe that. And unfortunately, you know, for the last 10 years, we've been saying, you know, we've been trying to educate people about what Islam is really about, what we as American Muslims are really about. And, you know, at some point, it gets really exhausting sometimes. At a certain point, you're like, okay, I've done my best. I have to move on.
Yes, I hear what you're saying. I'm talking with Fatemeh Fakhry, an American Muslim woman and an essayist in the book, I Speak for Myself. One of the things I found was that many of the women had grown in their religion, but one of the common concepts that so many of them talked about was that they felt that Islam is about peace and unity and harmony in the world, and that they found that within their religion, and that was a direct contrast to what most Americans had thought after 9/11 that Islam was about.
Mm-hmm.
Is that your experience of what most people who are Muslims consider it to be about?
Yeah, I mean, for me, like I said earlier, one of the biggest draws of Islam for me is the concept of justice, and then the other one is love. So those are Islam's two main ethoses that really speak to me, and I think a lot of Muslims feel that way. I think, the whole issue with 9/11 was, these guys basically just used religion to cover their awful, just disgusting, despicable behavior and their just horrific designs. I don't believe that 9/11 had anything specifically to do with Islam. I think Islam was really just a flimsy excuse that they used.
Well, and we know that all religions have been used by people who are committing violence everywhere. It's not unique.
Yeah, the Norwegian shooter from, a few weeks ago, he was very into the Crusades and Christian soldierdom and all that sort of stuff. And we know that Jesus was all about peace and, you know, loving your neighbor, which, you know, seems like a direct contrast between, the teachings of Jesus and what this guy did.
Well, we're running to the end of our time, and I was wondering if there was one thing that you wanted people to go away with about this book. We want, of course, people to go tonight to Powell's Books on West Burnside, where Fatemeh Fakhri will be reading from your essay, I hope, on I Speak for Myself, American Muslim Women. What would you like to leave people with about the book and about why it's important?
I guess the book is just a really great illustration of how varied the term Muslim women can be. You know, the term Muslim women is a worldwide term. I mean, there are Muslim women in every single country in the world. You know, it's impossible that we're all the same and we all think the same and we all act the same. So I guess my takeaway from this would be just remember that we're all different. You'll never meet two Muslim people who are the same.
Well, I think that's a good takeaway. I'll also leave people with that I found myself in tears at least three or four times reading this book. So again, it was the stories that were not necessarily specifically about seeking faith, though some of them were. There was a wonderful story about a young American, African-American woman from Texas who found her Islam in aiding people after Katrina. Mm-hmm. Some of these stories are just totally moving, and I found yours very moving because it took me to going home when you're older and you don't want to go back to that small place you came out of. Mm-hmm. So I just really want to encourage people to pick up this book and to go to the reading, and I want to thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you, Linda. I'm so happy to be here today, and I really hope to see a lot of people tonight at Powell's.
Okay, great. And I want to thank all of the listeners for listening to KBOO, and for all of you, those who are members. If you're not a member, you can go to our website, kboo.fm, and go to the tip jar and become a member now. Also, I'll have this audio on our website at kboo/a deeper look. And thank you for listening today.